Aloha, Disposable Heroes, Episode 9, featuring Maddie Ochoa. Here's what's going to go down. Maddie joins the Dirty Heads. Ends up on tour with one of his favorite drummers, Chad Sexton, and the band 311. Gets the call from Josh Freese to fill in for him on drums. Spends a summer in 2014 with your boys Pepper and much, much more. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to episode number 9 of Disposable Heroes. We're back, fresh off the Nice Dreams tour. All psyched to be home, and even more psyched that we got my boy Maddie from the Dirty Heads in the studio. All right.
Yo, what up?
Good. Thanks for coming up, brother.
Thanks for having me.
I love when we can get some FaceTime. And another great reason for the podcast. Everyone start a podcast because you hang out with your friends more.
Yeah.
It's badass.
I was just really looking for an excuse to come up here and hang out and eat tacos with you.
That's what I'm saying. Well, no, on a serious note, so we're trying to actually maybe possibly put it together on the break that I had from tour, which would have been kind of a rush. But of course, Maddie being the playboy that he is, was like, let's just wait till you get back and we'll do it. And it worked out perfect because you guys leave for tour.
Yeah, we leave October 23rd.
Nice. So,
a couple weeks.
And also, we got Mitch on this episode.
Yeah, I'm back.
In studio.
He's back, everyone.
Mitch Army Knife is back.
I'm not just running around venues trying to, I don't know, sort guest lists or whatnot.
Yeah, shows are advanced.
Mitch Army Knife.
Cryo is ordered for EDM bands.
Yeah.
And what? Mitch is in studio with us.
So where does the Army Knife name come from?
Yeah, well, because he does everything for Pepper. So, you know, so I think it started with Mitch of All Trades first.
Oh.
And then somehow along the lines,
became Mitch Armin.
Yeah, I kind of might attribute it to all the pot that I smoke. And my mind just wanders, man.
I think you're the king of nicknames.
It goes, I had some good ones. This
Horn, our lighting guy, for no fucking reason, became
his name's Horn.
Wow.
Horn.
His name's Jonathan Brecken. And his name is now Horn.
Yeah, really little backstory. That band, The Line, back in the day, that was on Volcom Entertainment when they first signed us back in like 2000 or something. There was a guitar player. His name was Don Horn. He spelled it with the E at the end.
That's a strong name. I like that.
So John Horn, Brett in the group text one day, there's an E at the end. So he wrote Horn-E. So it turned into Horn-E. He hated it instantly. You know you got a good nickname.
when you hate
when
it,
the
you know,
subject is not into it.
Yeah. It sticks.
It became John Horn.
Yeah.
E. Like that was his nickname. It wasn't like...
Every
it wasn't
time
just Horn, like Mitch for Horn over the radio. Yeah, it was like John Horn E.
So
he just loved that.
Yeah. So
that's good.
So you guys are leaving on October 23rd.
Yes.
Which is going to be, let's see, you're going to be just leaving for tour with the brothers in Dirty Heads, the dirtiest of heads. Which actually, I'm going to go back because let's go way back. We'll talk October 23rd, you leave for tour.
Yes.
Swim Team, the new album is coming out
on October 13th.
Friday the 13th, also coincidentally just told me John's birthday.
It is John's birthday, but more importantly, it's the record release.
Exactly. Sorry, John. you get Saturday next year. I guarantee it. Unless records get released on Saturdays next year.
Nobody wants to be reminded of getting older.
We love you, John.
How old is John?
I 27? No, 24, okay. I think.
All right.
Maybe younger than that, 22.
Yeah. Ah, he's tall, too.
Yeah, he looks good for his age.
Yeah. But, okay, so back to the old stuff. So, Pepper and Dirty Heads, I remember a show we played when we first moved over here in San Felipe, Mexico. And from what I remember, it was just the three of them dudes, right?
Yeah, that was before my time. I did hear about that. Was that the SWAT thing?
Yes, SWAT. which stands for something that I think in Mexican translate or Spanish, excuse me.
Mexican translate.
I was just in Nicaragua. That was a Freudian, Nicaraguan Freudian slip. But anyway, I'm getting off track. So the SWAT thing, which is basically a bunch of seniors in high school that are get sent to these areas. San Felipe, Mexico is this one. And it was Pepper and Dirty Heads when we'd both kind of first started out. And like you said, it was before your time.
That was before my time, yeah. I heard epic stories, though.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so you just get high school kids, and you just go to somewhere where they're able to drink, like Mexico, and then you just party, right?
Let's back up. The parents apparently signed off on this too, which blows me away.
No,
yeah, chaperones. There's chaperones, the SWAT people that put it together, but so that was the early like phase of Dirty Heads, and then like me/Pepper obviously didn't really come back into each other's lives until obviously you're in the band.
Yeah,
but I've kind of lost track of that middle section of the Dirty Heads, which is when you came about. So like when kind of, I guess I'm asking you, because this is another reason people that podcasts are rad, is you can also geek out on your friends, you know, and find out what it's all about. So tell me how you got into the Dirty Heads. I kind of know a little bit of a story from like what Cheese told me, but let everyone know that's
So they were signed to Warner, I guess, shortly after. I don't know if it was after that SWAT or around that the time of the SWAT play.
I think
or whatever.
It was a little bit after, because that was probably 2003-ish.
Yeah,
maybe we had only had Kona Town out, maybe In With The Old.
Yeah, so I actually didn't get into the group until like 07. And it was when they were signed on Warner, recorded a full record, had amazing musicians on it. You know, drummers like Josh Fries played on it. That's a little,
I didn't know that.
That's a little thing too. Like,
yeah.
So they were looking to form an actual touring band, because at the time it was just Jared, Dustin, John.
Right.
And
the SWAT crew is
the
like
SWAT
to call
crew.
Them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, I believe there, Rocky was the DJ at that time too. So
really?
It was like,
the dude from Sublime? Didn't Rocky play with Sublime?
Yes,
too?
He did, but that was after he was with us and that kind of formed. Huh. So yeah, Rocky used to be in Dirty Heads back in the day. And so yeah, they were looking to fulfill like the band, like get a drummer, get a bass player,
right,
and start touring like in a van and doing the thing. So
right.
They were basically holding auditions, and a family member of mine was working with Dirty Heads management,
right,
with Cheese.
Yep.
And
exactly. That was the story I was hearing.
Yeah. And they were just holding auditions, and I got an audition and totally crushed it. And no, but that's how I got the gig. Yeah. Just through family member, knowing their management, got, you know, auditioned, did it. And then,
because you grew up in Orange County, though, right?
Yeah. I went to school in LA, like middle school and high school.
Okay.
And middle high school, like I moved to Cyprus. So that's when I kind of came down to like Orange County area.
So you're living in Cyprus when you went and did the
yes, I was.
For the,
yeah.
For the Dirty Heads?
Yeah. Nice. And I had heard about Dirty Heads like through MySpace, you know? You
yeah,
remember?
Of course.
Remember MySpace? Yeah, yeah. Back in the day.
Possibly one of your favorites, maybe your top four or eight, nine, whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, they're somewhere in the top friends.
And then so you did the audition. How long was it till you got the call? And was it Cheese that called you up,
like,
or was it the boys? Or?
I actually, before the actual audition, I met with Cheese, I met with Jared, and we went to lunch. It happened to be on Jared's birthday, which I thought was very random and weird that he'd want to go to lunch with a stranger.
Yeah. That's the last thing I'd want to do on my birthday.
Exactly. Yeah. So I met them, and then we went down to 17th Street Studio.
Yeah. Where Michael Brown works or worked.
And yeah.
All
yeah.
That, like that whole
Rome too.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And they had a drum kit there, and I played drums in front of them just randomly while they sat in two chairs and judged. But it was really weird and awkward. But
it just adds to the nerves.
You didn't even like play with the band?
No, not at first. This was like a pre-audition for the audition, I guess.
Was it like riff or was it like play along
to
Led
like,
Zeppelin rock and roll?
No, it was just like, well, there's a drum set. Just Just play something. Just go, over there and play something.
Go a little Guitar Center on us.
I do like a solo? Do I just do a groove? Like, what do I do?
Yeah, so, that's heavy because you don't know. You're like, do these guys want to hear stuff? Or
I think they just wanted to see if I was full of shit and could actually like
hold a beat.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're like, maybe we shouldn't waste our time with this kid.
Yeah.
But so I did that. And then it was like, okay, we're going to give you the songs, learn these songs, come back next week. We're having auditions. And so I learned a couple songs, and there were songs that Josh Freese played on, which was awesome because I was listening to him. I was like, damn, this sounds really good.
Right.
So I just
And there was all the songs from that one album?
Yeah, from Any Port in a Storm. It was, I think it was Stand Tall, Drift In,
really?
Chelsea.
Wait, that's
me. Josh recorded all those drums. Yeah.
Which is funny because I think, I'm pretty sure Native Wayne produced Stand Tall.
Did
he do something?
No, he did. His voice is at the very end of the song. Of yeah. And Native Wayne's a legend.
Yeah, So go on. So Josh Freese played on.
So Josh Freese played those tracks, which got me super excited. I kind of just like.
You're following in footsteps.
I was just like, yeah, wait, now I could be, you know, the drummer for, you know, playing these songs that Josh played on. So that was kind of cool for me. And then, yeah, I did the audition, and they called me back a couple days later and said, all right, well, we're going to start rehearsing. We have a 311 tour this summer, and. Do you want to play in the band?
Sick.
I was like, and at that time, I was 19 years old. I was 19 or 20. I wasn't old enough to drink or do anything like that. And
yeah,
that was my first big tour. Was 311, Modest Yahoo was direct support, and then we were opening.
That's crazy. That's so funny, and you could probably comment on this, Mitch. Is the music industry? Everything happens so fast, like Maddie's talked about, or so slow.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's such like a hurry up and wait type of instance. And like, I don't know, especially on the podcast, we like that fast scenario happened so much. Like, I mean, that was the last, I think.
Well,
Frank or
David.
Dave
Myers Jr. Same thing happened to him, kind of.
Really?
Yeah. He auditioned for what's it called?
Luke, too. Didn't Luke have a similar situation?
I can't remember about Luke.
I think so.
Because I wasn't.
Oh, yeah. I heard that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was something like that.
But yeah. And then, he was talking about Dave had a similar one for
Frank Ocean.
Right. Yeah.
He got the call while he was in class at MI that he got the
gig. Oh, wow.
He was like 19 or 20.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Same thing.
And Frank Ocean. Next thing you know, he's on a tour.
And when you're a young kid, like, you're just like, I made it. This is the best thing. This is what I want to do. I want to travel.
And I would assume you were a Chad Sexton fan too.
Oh,
being a drummer.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. Growing up, 311, Sublime, Incubus. Mm. I even had a metal side. I was like into Slipknot and all that kind of stuff. So,
but more, okay. So, more because you being 19 or 20 in 2007, metal, you're talking about like Slipknot.
Yeah. The new metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else on your metal side?
It was kind of that genre. It was like Slipknot. It was Mudvayne. My first concert that I went to was...
Okay, was Mudvayne kind of like the... Sorry, back to your first concert. Yeah. But are they like the Slipknot light, kind of?
I feel like they were a little more melodic.
Okay, yeah. So...
But I don't know compare those two. Slipknot was very...
And I'm coming
way more chaotic and like so much more going on.
Yeah.
Mudvayne to me seemed more melodic, I guess.
I'm coming as a very fair weather like stance on it too, because I don't know that world super well. But back to your first concert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. First concert was it was a festival. It's called Tattoo the Earth. And it was Slipknot, Mudvayne, Sepultura, Seven Dust. It was pretty intense. And
what year was that?
Man, I want to say I was probably 15? So yeah, I didn't go to my
2000s.
First. I wasn't like a super early, like young kid going to concerts. Yeah. So it was early 2000s, probably, for sure.
Was it in Orange County?
It was. It was at the, I think it's the San Bernardino Event Center now.
Yep. No, it's the Glen Helen.
Glen Helen.
Okay. I just saw Tool.
Maybe at the time it was like the NOS Event Center or like,
oh, well, that's another one. NOS Event Center.
So, yeah, that might have been
indoor
that.
Then? It was indoor?
No, it was outdoor. So maybe Maybe it was like San Bernardino or so. I don't know.
I bet it's that San Bernardino.
Blockbuster. It used to be called Blockbuster Pavilion.
And was San Manuel Amphitheater at one time, right? Yeah,
and now it's back to Glen Helen?
Yep, it's Glen Helen Pavilion because I just went over this
naming
summer.
Rights.
I know.
What a bitch.
I know. One of the beautiful things about Red Rocks Amphitheater.
No naming rights.
No naming rights. No.
Yeah.
And it never
has.
It is
and always will be Red Rocks.
Yeah. It will never be Verizon Wireless's Red Rocks Amphitheater. Yeah.
You think the Hollywood Bowl would ever change? Cause,
oh, yeah. What is that a state park, too? Why? How come?
No. Who owns the Hollywood Bowl? That's a good question.
I have yet to even go there.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
I saw a... Speaking of kind of the new, actually, this ties right into what you're talking about. I saw System of a Down there because they're kind of falling into that, dude, that new metal.
Oh, definitely. So I was a fan.
That is such. Sure.
That's another one I forgot to mention.
Oh, System God. Down. Well, John, right? The drummer?
Yeah.
Oh, he is. I got a story just real quick. Tom had told me when he like wanted to get one of his drum sets like finished in some kind of like Egyptian tile or something like that. That, yeah, something like super nuts that he had to ship the drum. They had to ship the drums to Egypt because he wanted the super.
They shipped the drums to Egypt.
Something
that is
crazy.
So awesome.
I swear. I know it sounds crazy. We'll get Aaron on here someday. He can tell us about it.
All those custom drums that I see now are just nothing. Like, I don't care what you have, a marijuana leaf, a bike.
Yeah.
Nothing beats Egyptian tiles.
No.
Yeah. From Egypt.
That's going to make the highlight reel.
Yeah, it is.
This week, we talk about Egyptian tile drums.
Dude, that'd be sick.
But but System of a Down, man, those guys are.
I would imagine it cuts down on resonance as well. I mean, actual shell.
I'm sure it's real. It's
what kind of grout do you use for that? Like
exactly. Yeah,
the weight, man, the weight.
You've never been to the Hollywood Bowl.
Never. I was actually supposed to go this week to go see Kings of Leon, but the same day Cal Jam's going on.
Oh, so you're going to go see the Foo Fighters. So,
yeah, Foo Fighters,
also
Cage.
In San Bernardino.
Yeah.
God, that's going to be a good one. Yeah. I decided
it's a tough choice.
Just in the news, I decided that after seeing Tom Petty like 2 weeks ago at Kaboo, that I needed to see more concerts. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I get home from tour, there's kind of the last thing I want to do. But when I go do it, I'm really thankful that I did it.
100%, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I like to go visit friends. You know, like if they're touring and they're in town and we're home, like I'll go do that. And but going to actual concerts that I'm a fan of is rare to me. I should do that more.
But it's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just tough. It's like, well, one, you get used to like, okay, not to sound like a total prick, but you get used to not having to just hang out in the house all night long.
Uh-huh.
And it's just difficult. It's like it becomes a different experience. But I find that when I do that experience, I appreciate it more.
Yeah.
Like I saw at Verizon before it closed, Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, wow.
From the lawn at Verizon, which you know how far up that is.
Yeah.
And I think we were at Verizon like maybe a month before that. So it was a little weird.
A little different.
You know, a little disconnect.
Yeah. Elon Rubin's worth it though, man.
Dude, that whole, of course it was. It was like, and you're there, like you appreciate it more somehow.
Yeah.
It's just so much more fun that way.
Yeah.
Like, I think those guys are going to tour soon. I gotta go see them. But so, like, right is where you were picking up. So back to that concert. That was your first concert.
Yeah,
you'd already been playing drums though, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a huge Slipknot fan at that time. That's all I tried to play. I wasn't very good at it, but I tried. But yeah, that was my first concert, and that just like to actually see live music happening like that. It definitely made me want to like focus more on playing drums and make that like, you know, something that I did in my life, you know.
Were you playing along to Slipknot songs and stuff?
Yeah, I would try to, you know, along. That's I did that a lot when I was young. Did you do that when you were young?
100%.
Yeah, you just put the headphones on and
100%. But it was more to like more pocket stuff like Led Zeppelin and that kind of thing. But that's why, and I think that in my mind I was just thinking that imagining you playing along to something so sporadic like Slipknot and the way what kind of a drummer you are, where you're got such a solid pocket and such a solid groove and whatnot.
Well, thank you.
But then again, you also have a lot of the flair as well, you know what I mean? You got a good balance between it, and so I guess that maybe makes sense in my mind. I'm thinking out loud here. Yeah. That makes sense in my mind where that would maybe come from you playing along to the fucking Slipknot back in the day, you know?
It was just, I enjoyed the music and I thought that Joey Jordison was so cool and so good, and I just wanted to learn as much as I could. And you know, I was playing with a record. I'm not going to say I was playing them all correctly, but
of course.
I thought I was getting close to it, you know, and doing stuff like that, like, you know, helps your playing, I think, a lot. Playing something that you're not used to playing or playing outside of the box a little bit.
Yeah, I think that is a huge thing I think it probably any drummers, but definitely it was for me. Like, you're asking, playing along to stuff. Like, I mean, I could imagine playing along to AC/DC's Back in Black did a lot for my drumming back when I was starting to play drums and locked a lot of things in my mind.
Oh,
You're like, you hear something like that and you're like, okay, right on. You play along to most stock, simple,
groove
ever that Phil Redd ever did. But
that helps a lot. Like, that, you know,
tied it all into place for me. You know
and
I mean?
Like, just, you know, cause when you go and you record drums, you play to the click. And I think playing to those records, cause they were most of the time, I mean, for the most part, played to a click like that. So that would help timing, you know, at least it helped me. I felt like.
Yeah, totally. But then you think about it, Mitch, a lot of those old records weren't recorded to click, right?
No.
But you're dealing with drummers like John Bonham and stuff like that. I was just trying to think of, I wonder if that would...
They have that internal click going
on. Because would playing to a drummer that doesn't have a good internal clock and didn't record to a click, would that mess you up?
I don't know.
If you started out as a drummer, like in your infancy of being a drummer and played along to drummers with not the best internal clock from the 70s that never recorded to a click, would it fuck your muscle memory up?
Maybe it would just make you a different drummer in general. Maybe it just make you that more,
It's like I heard a modern drummer a few episodes, issues ago, had the birth of modern rock drumming and had a thing that Dave Grohl talked about, Ringo, and I didn't know that Ringo starts all his drum fills with his left hand.
Really?
He leads with his left.
Yeah, he leads with his left. And that's why he fucking sounds different a little bit.
That makes sense.
You know what I mean? And that was kind of like one of his things and why. I told someone that recently. I forget who it was. And they were like, God damn it. That's why I can never like play his stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was me.
Oh, it was you.
Yeah.
That's great though.
We were on tour and I was like, dude, that makes total sense because his fills are so fucking weird to me. And I thought it was just because of him. Like, he's just a weird drummer. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that in the studio, like from the producer or whoever's doing the song? You know, like maybe just try like a Ringo fill or something like that. And like, you know exactly what they're talking about when.
Yeah,
you know,
it's so true.
You're like, okay.
God bless Ringo.
So yeah, just backwards off the wall with my left hand. I got it.
Well, I'm just saying maybe, and then made me think of it because, you're right. Maybe learning to an off-center drummer, quote unquote, would lead you to something to being a drummer like Ringo, where no one ever thought of being a right-handed drummer and starting your leading with your left on your fills.
You did study though, right?
I did like drumline.
I'll never forget. Okay, you did drumline. That totally makes sense.
Yeah,
I'll never forget at the Marquee when we were on tour together.
Yeah,
I was like practicing on my practice pad to. What's it called? Stick control. And you walked up and you just started ripping like page 48.
Control. That's a classic.
Dude, and I couldn't even like think about, and you were ripping it like sight reading it. Like you'd never even seen it, but you've seen it before because you practiced it. But
yeah.
Your sight reading ability is just freaking top notch.
Thanks, dude. I mean, I wish it was way better than it is today, but if I would have kept, continuing my, lessons and whatnot, but yeah, no, I went to a performing arts like middle school. So like 6th, 7th, 8th in LA. And they were offering electives like band and drama and choir. And my mom was just always like, you need to, do something extra. Do something in the arts. Like, and find something you like. So she made me sign up for all these classes, drama and choir and band was one of the things, and I saw that you could play drums, and I was a huge fan of just MTV and music videos, and I always saw like all the rockers like the drums and the guitar, and so I think MTV is what really pushed me into like playing music.
God, I think me too.
Yeah,
but like 10 years earlier.
So cool.
Yeah, totally. Because I think about like Headbangers Ball in the late 80s, early 90s, and the one Metallica video. For instance, like, maybe I wouldn't have played drums if I didn't see that video. But same thing, just a different crazy.
Yeah. So in that,
not me.
Not Mitch, not me.
Not me. MTV did not do it for me. But like, I'm a little bit older than you and a little bit younger than you.
Yeah.
So it makes sense because like when MTV was really popping for me at that like age, it was all Backstreet Boys.
Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys.
99.
Hey, little Creed in there. Throw a little Creed
in
there.
Can you take me high?
And, yes, we can. Yeah, yes, we can.
Yeah. And a little Limp Bizkit.
Yep. And that did inspire Limp Bizkit. Me.
It's a new rapper. He's touring with Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Limp Pump, Bizkit. Lil Limp Bizkit.
Oh, you're Z too.
Yeah.
That like did not pump me up. No, that
did not. No, don't blame you. Yeah. But hey,
you know
real
what?
Quick.
I'm not going to Limp Bizkit. The drummer was pretty tight. John Otto.
Wes is a guitar player. John Otto. Yeah. No.
Yeah, he was
dope. He ripped. Don't you think too?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't have an opinion.
Really?
I don't know enough Limp
You don't
Bizkit.
Know enough. Okay.
I know the did, song. I know the two songs.
Because if you did, you could get you'd give it up to him.
Yeah.
You
mean
you don't know? Just think about it. Do 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 do.
No.
I got it. Maybe I like that. I like that song.
Yeah.
Too.
No.
I'm gonna say it here. I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Dude, okay, real quick story. We played this festival in Nebworth, England, like the one of those Sonosphere years ago. And I don't know how we got on it, but it was Metallica, Limp Bizkit, Alice in Chains, Pepper, and Zebrahead was the only other random band.
Dope.
And so we got to watch all these bands, and I shit you not, Limp Bizkit played right before Metallica, and it was like this back and right from Limp Bizkit's crowd was way bigger than Metallica's.
Wait, what year was this again?
2006, 7-ish or something.
Oh, okay.
I think because it was Metallica played last and Limp Bizkit, you know how festivals are, guys. Limp Bizkit had all the Metallica fans that were going to be there no matter who was playing.
Yeah.
And their fans, where their diehard fans left, maybe that didn't like Metallica as much. So.
That was a dark period, though, for Metallica.
God, that was. I was around the St. Anger time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was when people were like, oh, I'm jumping off this train
right
fucking now.
But they were still, I mean, we went into it, all of us on tour, like, we know what they're going to play, though. They're still going to play all the bangers.
Yeah.
Right, but I think it's like, I don't know, that was the dark period. Right now, they're on the upswing again. I think Metallica's back to being like, oh no, they're just legendary. Of course, they've had their up and down moments.
Yeah.
But now they're legendary. Because back then, they weren't legendary quite yet. They were, oh my God, what did they just put out?
And
they recorded
the
drums
out
with one fucking microphone. Oh yeah, and that movie didn't help either. It was. It
definitely
was.
Kind of mad, which is basically like a real long celebrity therapy session. Yeah. That they paid that guy. You guys remember that movie? They were saying how Lars in that movie, $30,000 a month they were paying that dude. The therapist.
The therapist?
To get that. This is personal opinion, and I'm a huge Metallica fan, to get that pile of shit album done. Saint Anger? Like, come on.
I'll never forget like Bob Rock, who was still producing him at that point. I actually mentioned
he played bass on that album, bro.
Oh, he did, right. Yeah. He mentioned, he's like, yeah, like we had two drum kits set up. Like we had like the one kit, like the main recording kit, all mic'd up, all 15 mics, whatever the fuck it is for. And then we had like the practice kit where we'd like just jam and you know, we'd write stuff and then we could beat that one up. And you had this like ringing snare and there's just like one microphone over it. And one day he goes over and he just starts playing that kit. And I'm like, that's the sound. And I just remember going, you idiot.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
That snare drum is the death of that album.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people know the snare from Saint Anger in the drum world, and it's like one of the worst, like, what would you call that? Nightmare story. There's probably a word for, like,
I just
it's infamous. It's one of the most infamous snares in the drum in history.
Right up with the Black Beauty, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
By the way, Lars, if you want to be on the podcast next week, we'd love to have you.
Yeah.
We still love think you're a legend.
We love you, Lars.
I was listening to Metallica on the way up here, so yes. Definitely.
All
is forgiven.
For whom the bell tolls, all is forgiven. All right. So back to after you went to this concert and in between the tryout for the Dirtiest of Heads.
Yes,
did you have any bands before?
I did. I played a couple high school bands, but I actually joined a funk band from Santa Ana.
So much of your drumming.
Yeah, and so the band director, main guy, like lead singer, bass player, he played all the instruments, he wrote all the music. He was a drummer too. And so I went to go audition for this band. This is kind of like right out of high school, before the Dirty Heads audition and all that stuff, kind of to get my...
2006-ish or something?
Yeah, yeah, to get like my club legs going, you know, like to actually start playing out in clubs and miking drums and, you know, doing all that, doing gigs. And he was a drummer, so he helped me a lot, like kind of like...
Fuck out of you.
Yeah, he was just like...
Mentored.
He was always like, hit those drums, like, you know, put your foot through that kick drum. Like, I want to hear, you know, like hit that snare, and kind of like... brought out kind of the drummer that I am today, as far as like hard hitting and playing through the drum. And I always thought that it sounded
great.
With the funk
in there, though. I think that's what I was talking about, the flair earlier that I always saw in your drumming. Like you saying you played in a funk band, I'm like, there it is.
Because
like a little bit of that Chad Smith-ish kind of like, you know what I mean?
But it's just, it was just pocket and just groove. And we would do gigs where I would have a kick drum, a snare, a hat, and maybe one cymbal, and that would be like the kit. And you know, we'll play 2 hours on that, like cover songs and originals and everything. Like,
just no fills really.
No, the fill was like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah,
like just that was the fill.
Some, some sick ghost noting,
exactly.
And some hi-hat.
That's some
training, right?
Yeah,
there.
Basically, it was kind of like a boot camp for me.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, like it got me ready to, you know, actually play in clubs and that kind of stuff. So,
and then. Before that, there was a high school band.
Yeah, before that, there was a couple high school like rock bands. Like, we were really in Incubus and like experimental kind of stuff. So I went through like a weird phase there during that time. But I did the whole high school drumline thing. That's where I got all the rudiments down, and that, like, you know, worked on my click.
What is spot reading? You guys are talking about
sight reading.
Yeah. That just like seeing it and instantly being able to play it.
Yeah, just putting a sheet of music in front of you and, okay, I played this line and kind of do it right then and there.
Like, I was in concert band, and I remember that day when you had to sight read. Sight reading day.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I couldn't do the bells or the marimba or any of that kind of stuff.
That's a whole nother level.
That's a whole nother sight level.
Well, isn't drum music's kind of some of the more confusing written music, like sheet music, there is, right? Like, as far as your normal four or five like bass instruments, guitar, piano.
I guess I can. Yes. Would you say that you can see an entire phrase? Like, you can see one bar at once. You don't read it linear, do you? Or you read it a bar in front and then play it? Like, you know,
you kind of you kind of want to keep looking ahead, you know, while you're playing it. So to be like successful at sight reading, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more complicated. I think piano is probably more difficult.
Yeah,
to read, because it's percussion and bass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a percussion. It's two
and notes on the scale. At least with drums and like, say you're just playing snare drum, it's all linear, just one line.
Yeah, right.
Probably more complicated rhythms though.
But to read a kit though, like all the stuff that they print in the back
the accents
of like
that
they print in the back of the drum magazines.
Yeah,
and that's like,
I've seen some people do really great at that. Me, nah.
Yeah, I'm not.
I kind of just let me hear it, and then I can maybe
kind of
repeat it.
If you play it and then you let me read it, sure. Because then I've heard it and I'm good.
Didn't they base that movie off of that Drumline or something like that? Did you ever see that movie with Nick Cannon?
No.
Is it good?
I mean,
should we have the director on the podcast?
I saw Whiplash.
Maybe.
I didn't see
Drumline. Whiplash was pretty.
Ooh,
Whiplash was sick. That was a sick movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect, and that was a good one, but. So you didn't tour with those other bands, did you? You just did like kind of
regional, local? We just played local. Yeah. Okay.
So you jumped into the Dirty Heads
and
touring. So obviously you're super like overwhelmed by how pumped you are, I would imagine, on that going on tour with 311.
Yeah.
Was there any moments where you hit tour like, because touring's a lot harder than people think.
Yeah.
Especially
when you're not making any money.
Yeah. To your average person, they think like, you would put that on paper going, I'm going on tour with 311, my first tour ever. Like that, that is kind of like on paper sounds like, well, you made it, which no, that's like the furthest thing.
It was just, I don't know. It was new for me, and like the touring thing and being gone for a certain amount of time. Like, I was just stoked to be there. Like, I didn't know how long it was going to last. I didn't know if I was ever going to make money from it, but I knew at that time, like, that's where I wanted to be. And I just enjoyed playing drums, and I was with this group of guys who, like, they were all in the same boat, which I think is hard for any bands like starting out or trying to, you know, I'm doing the air quotes, make it.
Uh-huh.
But everybody in the group has to be on the same level and just as committed and willing to make those sacrifices that you are. So I felt like everybody at that time, you know, was on the same level. And we were touring with 311. I grew up listening to them, and it was amazing.
Totally. Wait, what year was that?
That was 07.
That's crazy. So when did you guys tour with the 06?
For the first time ever?
Yeah,
it was 06, yeah. The year before with 311.
311, yeah.
Yeah, because it was us, the Wailers, and 311.
Yeah. They were crushing those years.
Wait, I think we're a year off from you guys. When did you guys do Warped Tour?
I want to say 09.
Oh, okay, because 07 when you guys were on with 311, we were on the first year we did main stage Warped Tour.
Okay, yeah.
So, how was Warped Tour experience for you? Had you been to it before?
I had been to the shows before.
Like in Anaheim or in
wherever. Local shows and
back in the day.
But touring Warped Tour, like I have.
Was it a shocker being on it and being like, whoa, this is, because it was for us. I remember in 2001, we were like, woo.
And at that time, so that was 09. So we had been touring for like 2 years in the van already. So that was probably the toughest tour that we had to do just because the drives are so intense. And
you were in a van too?
We were in a van, yeah.
And you got to be there in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know what time you're going to play.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that when you play the Warped Tour, there's like a schedule you have to kind of follow. Like you have to be there.
It's like a lottery.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. And the schedule will come out every day. And it's like, okay, well, you guys are on this stage at 11 o'clock in the morning. Yeah,
exactly.
Or you're on this stage at 7 o'clock tonight, you know.
Totally. What stage were you guys playing at that point?
I think Skull Candy had a stage, and we were on that stage.
Yep, Skull Candy did have a stage, man. I remember.
And then you guys did it again. Did you guys do it after 2007? Before?
Yeah.
When did you do it
again? We did it again in 2010 or 11.
Were you guys in a bus both times?
Yeah. Yeah, that's we did it in a van twice in 2001 and 2003. And then not the whole thing in 2003, though. You guys did the whole tour?
No. We did, I want to say, 3 weeks, maybe. Four weeks. How long is it?
It's like six, seven weeks. Even.
Okay, maybe we did like 4 weeks or something. I think we broke it up too.
Yeah.
Who
else was on that year?
Bad Religion, of course. Sick.
09?
Yeah.
You said?
Yeah. Little Brooks Wackerman up there before he went to join the Avenged Boys.
Yeah.
Your guys kind of hometown brethren.
Jared, I always forget what the relationship is between him and Brooks, but it's someone's cousin who was married to someone who lives down the street who is brother or sister with
that's
Brooks.
Dog sat.
There's a connection there, but Brooks, yeah, he's the man, dude. He's so good. He's so humble too.
Now he's with Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah, now he's crushing Avenged.
I wonder if he'll still play with Tenacious D. If and when they need him, because he would play with, when he was a Bad Religion, I saw him play a couple times. I saw him at Santa Barbara Bowl with Tenacious D.
I saw him at the drum off he did that 1 year.
Oh, really?
With Tenacious D. He played there.
I saw a sick, I think it was the Remo Instagram or his Instagram of his drum solo on the Metallica tour.
Yeah.
At one of the stadiums, and it was so sick.
Yeah. Man, he has a cool, unique style too. You've seen him play live.
Well, and also his brother, John Wackerman, is an absolute ledge in the drum game. Also plays for Zildjian. Shout out to Zildjian.
Best cymbal in the world.
All right. So Warped Tour, you started out touring, and then you guys are touring off the album Any Port is a Storm.
Yep, yeah.
For the 311 tour.
Correct,
real quick, who else was on that 311 tour?
Modest Yahoo,
right? Yeah. Who you guys later linked up with him
on a later record, on the following record, actually.
Damn, he was pretty big right then, too. That was 2007?
Yeah.
Because that song came out in 2006.
God, that shows how big... And 311 was still riding probably off of their Amber. I mean, Amber was such a... God, it's such a huge song.
Yeah.
And then in like 2005 or 6, they had the cover too from 51st
the love
Dates.
Song
the love song
the cure the love
it's a
song
great cover too
yeah it's a really good cover.
I think if you were to look up stats, that's their most successful song, like as far as weeks
numbers?
Charting
it's really good.
How's Chad's those offbeat accents that Chad does on the hi-hat,
dude?
On
he's that, nasty on he comes from like the
push
oh god
he comes from that drumline background too, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, he writes a lot of their song, like the guitar riffs and stuff.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you play? Do you write? Do you play guitar and do any of that?
I actually recently started taking some guitar lessons from my boy Dean, who's featured on the intro of the Disposable Heroes podcast.
Mm-hmm. Nice, dude.
But yeah, because I've always known how to. I guess what I should say is I've learned guitar theory in the last year, and like, you know what I mean.
Trying
to understand the like map of the.
Yeah.
Of the guitar
formations and then
and just,
it's great.
You're pretty good at it, aren't you?
I mean,
you do all the acoustic stuff.
Now I do. When I was in high school, one of my first bands, like my guitar player, left his guitar at my house for like 2 years. So like, whenever you know,
what kind of guitar was it?
He had like a custom. It wasn't like I just bought like a Strat at the. Right. He had like put together, built this guitar.
Damn.
I don't know. It was crazy. But you know, the sun would go down, can't play drums anymore. And then that's when
good cut. I never thought of that.
I would just pick up
I could still rock because I got this guitar.
Exactly. So I would pick that up. And so I did that in high school and kind of would just secretly keep trying to play. And it wasn't until like I was in the band in Dirty Heads for like a couple years where I was like, hey, guys, I can kind of play guitar. Like, if you need like an extra guitar player for acoustic stuff, yeah, let's do it. So it kind of just fills up the sound. And plus, we have John already who handles all the percussion. And like, I would just kind of sit there with an egg shaker and be like, this Cajon. Is fun.
You want a Cajon isn't going to do much when you have John.
Yeah.
Hey, did you notice when those 2 years that the guitar got left to your house, did that kind of translated to you being kind of a more well-rounded drummer or better drummer?
I think it made me, I don't know. It playing drums made me a better guitar player, I think, because
the rhythm,
the percussive,
yeah,
and like strumming and all that kind of made me. I have pretty decent pocket, but I'm still working on all the
because I guess Dean same
the solos
thing,
and whatnot.
Yeah, same thing with Dean whenever he like tries to, because I'm like geeking out like obviously on thrash, but I'm like, hey, I want to learn like this song or whatever, and then he always trips out like, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot like. You're going to learn so quick because he gives lessons to other people and takes them forever. But it's because what you're talking about, you know, timing.
Yeah, the foundation is there already from playing drums, which is great.
Right.
So I'm sure that comes to you easily too. So it's like you have that rhythm. It's like, oh, I'll be the best rhythm guitar player. Just give me a couple chords and I'll just, exactly. I'll keep the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's great. Have you ever laid down any guitar on any of the Dirty Heads albums for like a...
I have not.
Just for fun or anything?
No. I mean, I try to kind of write stuff, you know, here and there, and I'll send ideas to
of course.
To Jared and Dustin and stuff, and then, you know.
I love you call him Dustin.
I know. Is that weird? Everybody calls him Duddy.
I had to think about it the first time he said it. I was like, Duddy.
Yeah. It's like a concerned parent.
hey, this is a good one. I don't know if you, Mitch, you might not know, but I remember you sent me a text about it when, speaking of Josh Fries, he hit you up to fill in for himself for Sublime with Rome.
Yeah.
I'm sure was an unbelievable honor.
Yeah, it was. So when Sublime with Rome first got together, then they reformed, I guess it would be, or not reformed, because it's a new band, Sublime with Rome.
That was like 2009, right?
Yeah, 2009. I think 2009 was like their first show.
Smokeout. The Cypress Hill Smokeout,
I
think.
Yeah, so, and then they continued to do a couple tours after that, which we toured with them.
Oh, and Bud was still...
Band still, yeah. So for me, that was crazy too, because it's like not only being able to go on tour with 311 and 07, like we're, you know, able to go on tour with Sublime with Rome and, you know, meet Eric and Bud and become friends with them and do shows with them. And I just remember, like, I'm sure you guys too, you know, listening to all the records, and I played along to all the records. And
To the Sublime records?
Oh yeah.
Oh, Bud got.
Oh yeah. He's got like this sick hi-hat thing that no one can replicate.
And then watching him play too with his nuts, huge hammer.
His tomahawk chop.
Yeah, his tomahawk snare. You know?
You're right. That hi-hat is like his hi-hat, like on Santa Ria.
Yeah.
Freaking nuts.
No one can like replicate it or do it the same way that he does.
Yeah. Do you guys think one of the reasons it swings so good and whatnot is because he doesn't hit the snare same time as the hi-hat?
Yeah. I mean, that all comes in the groove that he puts down. Maybe. For sure.
Yeah.
Funny, weird Bud Goff act. You know, in the beginning, on what's the first song on Garden Grove? You know those samples that you hear that like mimic the snare drum?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what those are from?
Paul Leary. The shotgun snares.
Yeah, yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah. Like, oh, what is that? Yeah.
He had a drum pad next to the snare that would get triggered when they were recording, and they mixed that shit in. Like every other bar, like it was just so every time he hit the snare, it would trigger that pad because it was like
so it was 90s. An accident.
Yeah, it was total accident.
Oh wow!
And it became the thing.
That is a super nerdy, geeky thing that you know.
Yeah, well, it comes from being an engineer because I worked at Total Access.
Yeah,
and Paul and dude, actually, you know who told me that is the fourth member,
Michael.
Michael, yeah,
nice.
He knows. If you want to know anything about how Sublime recorded anything, that's who you want to talk to.
Yeah,
right. But he told me about that, and I was like, "Oh shit, I never even thought about that."
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead. Just a weird fun fact.
Yeah. No, that's.
Oh yeah. Playing with Sublime.
Yes.
And then
With Bud still in it.
With Bud still in the band, so there were a couple shows, actually, kind of a whole tour, like a South American tour that they booked, to where, for reasons unknown to me, Bud Gaw could not travel out of the country.
Okay.
So he made the call to me. And that was the first time where I kind of filled in for Sublime with Rome and got to play with Eric and play all those songs. And that was in South America. So that was a 2-week run that we did. I did that. And then later on, while Bud was still in the band, I did a couple Canada shows.
Same
with them.
If he could go to Australia, he sure as hell couldn't go to Canada.
Exactly.
They keep people out of there.
Yeah. So later on, Bud left the band and Josh came in. Josh became the permanent, I guess, or fill-in drummer at that time for a full-time member for Sublime's Rome. And there were a couple gigs that he couldn't make, and he reached out to me and asked me to do, which I had done it previously when Bud was in the band, so it kind of made sense. But you know, I still like to brag to people, and Josh personally called me and asked me to fill in for him.
It's so funny because I took the whole Sublime situation out of it.
Oh, Josh is listening to this too, so you just
I'm
just fangirling.
Well, no, because we just said
him and Wanda
earlier. He's done like 200 Sting shows this year.
Yeah,
might not hear this because he's busy.
He's in like Prague somewhere.
Jesus.
Yeah. You see some of those venues that Sting plays?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
On just that Josh posts and like
castles and.
Yeah, castles with moats and waterfalls like around the drum riser.
Yeah,
and, like,
it looks fake almost.
Yeah. He just, it's the next level when.
Yeah.
Like literally princes and sheiks want you to come like play in certain places around the world like that.
Crazy. He keeps posting one video, like one song in particular.
Walking on the Moon.
Dude, that section.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one that I think we reposted. The Disposable Heroes one posted it.
Yeah, let me just, straight up, hearing Josh Freese play Stuart Copeland drum parts is such a pleasure.
Right. Oh, wow.
As a drummer to watch, you're just like, I mean, it's good to watch, of course, the man himself, Stuart Copeland, play him, but so sick to watch Josh play him because it's different
nuts.
Take on him.
Like, that video of him playing Walking on the Moon is just...
Yeah, he's shit.
He's doing some shit with his left hand, like these, like... what do you call them? They're like 16th notes, but like he's
just his left hand or something.
Yeah, but it's just his left hand. And it's like mind boggling. When you look at his wrist, it doesn't even look like they're moving.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's just like, it's all finger. It's all his fingers.
Yeah. Or? I don't know. Honestly, it might just be shitty Instagram video quality too, and phone quality, but it's still amazing just to hear even.
Yeah.
Just like pull it up.
Yeah. He's,
yeah. No, it's amazing.
He kills it.
I guess let's jump forward to the new album now. Let's talk about
Swim Team.
How is it recording that? Because I know the last album you guys did a bunch of you guys did kind of like a good mix of some programming and live drums.
Yeah, we tend to, like, every record that we come out with, we tend to do something different, you know. And,
yeah.
And we also record at different places. Like, we've been to Sonic Ranch. You guys been there before?
No, we
El Paso.
But everyone has.
Sonic Ranch.
Heard so many.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We've recorded there before. We did the LA thing, kind of, you know, rented out a studio out there for a few weeks.
Nice.
This record that's coming out October 13th, we recorded in Costa Mesa.
Which I think it'll be out when this...
Friday the 13th.
When this comes out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, it'll already
be
out.
About, so the swim team, out now?
Out now. So we're talking in the future.
So, I'm sorry, now...
Yeah, so we recorded Costa Mesa Studios, which is really nice because everyone in the band is kind of lives locally. Yeah. Around that area, so you're able to go to the studio and head home for lunch if you want, come back, you know, and
yeah,
and focus on that. So I was super stoked. I got to use my new DW maple mahogany drum kit on it. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
on that
recently
new kit.
I've been with DW for coming up on a year now.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
because the thing you wouldn't know, like we also in a prior podcast, Mike Fasano, we're like, oh yeah, that's right. He just recently got officially signed to Zildjian.
But you've
like,
yeah,
you've all but same always thing. Played DW, right?
I mean, DW drums are like the best.
Because you were playing DW when we were on tour with you, weren't you?
No, I was
no Pacific.
I was Orange County.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Orange County drums. Yeah. Was,
oh wow, OCDP.
Yeah. Yeah. Local okay. boys, right?
So
there.
Tell us yeah. about your new kit. Yeah, let's hear about this thing.
So yeah,
that you recorded swim team with.
Yeah, it's a 6-piece maple mahogany drum kit. Okay. Right when I signed with DW, I just wanted to get a new drum kit, and I didn't know really what to get. And Garrison over at DW recommended this maple mahogany kit, and it just sounds great live. And I was anxious to see what it sounded like recorded, and it sounded amazing. We
really?
Used it on pretty much every single track. Yeah,
the mahogany, huh?
Yeah.
Was it half-half? Do you know what how many layers of each are in the... That's some super nerd shit.
Yeah, I don't really know the
well,
layers.
The same
I know
thing.
It looks awesome, and yeah, it sounds amazing.
That's what I'm talking about. No, because the same thing with the Bubinga Birch Tama kit that I play is like same
ooh,
thing.
Bubinga.
It's yeah, it's a mix
sounds
of the
exotic.
Two. It is.
Yeah.
It's exotic as fuck.
Yeah.
Mahogany, do they make a ton of like full kits with mahogany or more
I
just snares?
I don't think so. Yeah. This is like a new thing. It was like it's like a hybrid.
Is it heavy? Is mahogany a heavy heavier wood?
It's got some girth to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Your Birch Bubinga is heavier than my Maple Star Classic.
Yeah,
so.
I think that Bubinga wood's like super dense. That's what I was wondering, but and then what? So 6-piece, 2 rack toms, 2 floor toms, or
1 up, 2 down?
Oh yeah, I got 1 up, 2 down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're talking your timbali, yeah, snare.
Oh, five piece kit.
1 up, 2 down kick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what? So your 1 up rack tom is a 12-inch?
Yeah, we got 12. I think I'm doing 12x8, 16x16. 18x16.
Sick.
Those 16x16s, like they're the classic size, but they're so awesome.
Yeah.
They just have this like, are they on legs too?
Yeah. Yeah.
God. Are those, is the 16x16 or am I thinking of the 12-inch rack tom is the one that is just so hard to tune sometimes?
Your 12-inch?
Yeah.
Your 12-inch is hard to tune.
Okay.
12 and 13. Well, the depth to like rim ratio is just not, it doesn't work sometimes because they're so close together in circumference,
yeah,
that the pitch is sometimes the same.
Gotcha.
To get both of them to resonate in the same kind of like zone.
Do you have the shallower rack tom?
Yeah,
I got a 12x7 and 13x9.
Okay, yeah,
kind of like I think that they're it's kind of almost on that like you know those ones that Adrian Young would use in
Orange
County. He had those, but his were super shallow. Like,
yeah,
almost looked like snares.
Yeah,
that he had.
I kind of like that.
Me
you know?
Too. His shot big up Adrian. His kits are so sick looking.
Yeah.
So okay, then the kick drum is just 22x18 or standard?
22x20.
Oh, yeah, a little bit more,
a little deeper,
a little bit more of a cannon, and then
yeah.
What kind of timbali are you rocking?
Actually, John John's on timbali.
Oh yeah, so you don't even.
Yeah, he has all LP equipment. Yeah, I'm rocking more electronics.
Is he still triggering all your snare delays and all that?
He's using a Boss pedal.
That's
for Space
so
Echo.
Like I've never seen that for the first time. I was like,
oh yeah, when we did the tour.
Holy
yeah,
shit, it's so cool.
I used to do it myself, but it was it made more sense for him to do it because he can think about it more, and I don't have to really worry about it too much. And
doesn't Bird from Soja have a delay pedal on his high? I remember from like Closer to the Sun, I was talking to him.
He
and
does,
I noticed
he's got it dialed in, like the way that
he has it set up.
What does
he do? Because you guys did the tour of them.
Yeah,
this summer, right?
he has the same pedal, but he has it like rigged up, like to where it's kind of like hanging over his snare a little bit at this angle where it's tilted down to where like he can, with his left hand, he can kind of just hit it with his knuckle and trigger it, you know, like a backhand kind of thing, and still hit the snare and then turn it off to
and
where
it,
like,
is it just rigged to a snare for delays?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's
you know who we used to play with, Joe Tomino.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen Joe Tomino?
Yeah. We did a couple shows with him.
He, Dub Trio.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. He's
and
got
Modest Yahoo now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, 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 he's back with Modest. He's one of my favorite drummers, man. His rig that he has for delays and effects, like,
yeah,
he does all his own shit. He triggers the timbale, the snare, and the hi hat, and he has like an external mic that he can kind of just drag over like any tom or cymbal, and like,
whoa,
he's next level, dude. He's next level.
He's like the like Lee Scratch Perry of like
drummers
or something.
He's
like
nasty.
That,
if you
it's
haven't
funny
heard him,
you,
Joe Tomino, check him out.
You watch, and he's all, I remember, I've met him a few times. He's such a sweet dude.
Humble, yeah. Does yoga every morning.
Remember some of these old school Police videos of Stuart Copeland, actually, where he had the full-blown tape echo next to his drums, and you could imagine it, and he was like triggering it himself for his high, all those like crazy washy hi-hat reverbs and stuff. He's doing all that by himself live.
That's
like,
crazy, because you're not just playing, you're like...
Yeah, you're producing.
Operating. Affecting everything, too.
You're producing yourself, too. Like, I'm just doing a little production here on top of what I'm playing, guys. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
It's like, don't forget about the breakdown, but you're going to, you know, affect your hi-hat over here.
The way you guys do it is crazy, too, because, like, John will be, like, full on, like, you know, some percussionists, they don't actually have real loops.
Yeah.
Like, they're just kind of playing around the groove. Yeah. You and John have actual integrated grooves.
Yeah.
Where you play together.
John thinks like a drummer. He is a drummer.
He
is
a drummer.
He's a drummer, but he's also a great percussion player. And we've been doing it. We've been playing together for so long that we kind of like, you know what each other's going to do and how to like play off of each other, which is great. That's
it's,
why I
it's
love
super
that
cool. And then you see John, and he'll like do this brah 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 brah, and then like all of a sudden his left hand, and that's on like a timbale, an imaginary timbale, guys.
Yeah.
And then he takes his left hand and fucking smashes the space echo.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't even think about it. It's like just another percussion item, and then turns it back off again, and the delay hits, and you're like, What the fuck did he just hit there?
He makes me look good.
yeah, he does. No.
Did Maddie just do that? No, it's John.
It's nuts.
Do you guys ever do you guys freestyle a lot up on stage, or do you guys kind of stick to
talking about, you mean like a kind of like a breakdown thing, or you mean like playing
that
the song?
I know, but I would like to talk about that too. But because I saw that sick thing that Vic Firth posted of you guys at Soundcheck?
Yeah,
or
that was at Soundcheck.
That was so sick. But get back to that. But no, just in the middle of song, like when you guys are playing a song, like me, I probably like never play a song totally the same ever twice, you know, live. Do you guys play your parts like together the same every time?
We actually do, just because we run a lot of tracks and like,
right,
you know,
of course,
backing and stuff. So we're running click on every song. So once we figure out what we like doing, you know, like in rehearsal or whatever, we just kind of stick to that and
work it out in rehearsal, get master it and right.
Nice. Changing stuff like sometimes, which we've done, you know, here and there, like accidents, you know, maybe did a different fill or something. Sometimes it screws everybody else in the band up because they're so used to hearing one thing and relying on it.
Right.
That like if you change something, they look at you like you just fucked up or something.
And being on a click and all that, and if there's if there's tracks running, that shit sticks out more, I would imagine, when you get off the track a little.
Yeah, more, yeah. You know? And you know, there's also, there could be hip hop loops going on, so you don't want to play something totally wacky.
Or if there's a breakdown or something. Yeah. That you gotta, but back to that, if anyone wants to go, just creep out on Vic Firth's Instagram, way deep in there, maybe a year ago.
Oh, yeah,
They posted this sick percussion extravaganza between with John and Maddie, and you guys gonna bring something like that to the show?
Man, we've been talking about it for so long. It's just actually getting in there to do it. But I feel like a lot of our songs, there are little like kind of features that we have,
totally,
you know, or like if it's not on the actual record, like we kind of just make our own thing happen. You know, like we're like, oh, this spot seems pretty cool. Maybe we'll, you know, spice it up a little bit.
Right.
But I don't know. Maybe when we start doing those like 2 hour sets, when we get to like 311 status and we can throw in our own drum breakdown in there or something.
I know. But then you guys will have your own though. Cause that's a different vibe.
For sure.
What are you guys' thoughts on that? There's a lot of those drum breakdowns these days. That's
kind of
311 was definitely the first one I ever saw though. As far as the big, because Metallica even did it at the Rose Bowl. I saw Metallica and they all of a sudden they busted out the Tyco drums. They all started playing and I was like, oh my God, Metallica's doing the everyone on the band drum solo. Yeah, it was pretty
am I a fan of this or am I not?
Put it this way. Yeah. It made me like question it. Like
I saw the thing that you did during the show. That's cool.
Oh, when I did
the STDS. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fun. Original though. Like that's different. I like that.
That was pretty fun. And my whole theory was, you know, just to hopefully entertain the people a little more that like maybe don't appreciate drums as much.
Throwing a couple of banger songs in there, you know, out there. Yeah. Sometimes it gets too much. You know, you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is your drum solo.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Get back to the music.
That's what was also nice is it was short. It wasn't like a 6 minute opus, drum opus.
I think that's probably why John and I haven't done anything like that because we're just like, okay, we have little parts throughout the set, you know. I think we'll just keep it like that. And, true.
And if you were to link them all together, like you're already taking up a solo chunk of the set as it is kind of deal.
Exactly.
But I don't know. Bottom line
is. But I say that now and who knows. Next tour we could have.
Yeah, you'll have bigger Tyco drums than Metallica.
Exactly. John's going to push out a little baby drum kit out there.
Yeah. Like 21 Pilots will float him on the crowd. Little drum kit.
That's crazy. That's so nuts.
Yeah. Did you ever see footage of that?
The 21
Pilots, dude?
I'm just like, because I know some of their fans are younger. What happens if there's a small little teenage girl just getting crushed by the plywood and the kick drum.
So for any of you
they've got a lawyer that's just waiting. Lawsuit.
But for any of you who don't know, I think Mitch, you showed it to me like right when 21 Pilots was starting to like rocket ship into the stratosphere as far as being a huge band, and the drummer had a small little cocktail drum kit set up on a mini riser on the side of his real riser, and the crew pushed him out onto this crowd, and they would crowd surf his mini drum riser while he's playing on the crowd. And then I remember I was asking someone too, I was like, because I had so many questions obviously right when I heard this, I was like, so how do they get him back? Like what if
they just like floats out?
And then I guess supposedly they had ropes connected to it, so they would start like tugging him and then he would start to work his way back. And but hey, bottom line, crazy killer idea.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's worked out
until the lawsuit comes.
Splendidly. But, crazy stuff.
Please don't ever ask us to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see. We got the new album. What else is going on?
I know how
it is with that, with new albums and stuff. It's like super tunnel vision with that whole process and whatnot. But you guys are going on tour. You're bringing Tyrone's Jacket, right?
Yep, Tyrone's Jacket. And,
is it there on the album too?
The supporting band, Unlikely Candidates, they are on the record.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
So what was it like? I'm going to interject. What was it like working with Mr. 311 himself on the record?
Nick Hexum.
I unfortunately was not there for the session, but I heard it went pretty awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was more of a writing session. Yeah,
it was more like a writing session. And the song actually was written for the last record.
Oh, really?
And it just didn't get finished in time. And so they went back to it for this record and finished it up. And Rome actually did the production on it. So it came out pretty rad. It has signature 311 like guitar lick that Nick actually played,
that dreamy
the amber type of thing on it, which is really cool. So
yeah, that washy dreamy just like vibey kind of
and it's kind of cool to see it come around like full circle, you know, like joining the band in 07 and then touring with 311 after being such a huge fan, and then now, you know, having the guys be able to write a song with him. You know, yeah, it's like, well, what can come out of this? You know, it's like, yeah, can we maybe tour with them again? Like, you know,
yeah,
no, future collabs and stuff like that.
It's super rad, those whole full circle moments. It's like, I mean, you're like, how you're saying, it's the first time you've ever been to this studio.
Yeah.
Us being in here, and it used to be Pennywise's place. It's like the same kind of, like,
that's nuts,
a different version of what you're, yeah, talking about, you know?
When I was 16, I applied for a job here.
Really?
Yeah. And Darian, who was the engineer, was sitting right where I'm sitting right now.
Wow. And I walked like you got the job.
Yeah. And I don't think I even had a car. I can't remember how I got here, to be totally honest. But I think he asked me, he was like, how are you going to work for me? You don't even have a car.
Yeah.
Like, that was what, and if you're, you,
like,
know,
I don't,
Darian,
care.
Yeah, he, whatever, sounds like,
that's how dry he is. He's like, you don't even have a car, dude.
Yeah.
Like, sorry.
You're like, I don't care. I'll find my way.
Yeah, and I did.
It's pretty surreal to see that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, totally, right? So it's all those, like, pinch me moments, you know, you kind of got.
I remember before the audition that I had with Dirty Heads, listening to your records.
Really?
Going, well, I haven't really played reggae music before. I didn't really know about the old school reggae music or, like,
right,
you know, like, I barely even heard of Steel Pulse, like,
right.
So, like, listening to your records is kind of like what got in my brain to, like,
right,
like, how, yeah, should I tackle this Dirty Head sound? Like, well, how should I approach playing the drums?
And yeah,
I never told you that, actually.
I'm absolutely flattered and honored, yeah, and at the same time, makes complete sense, I guess, because,
yeah,
at that time,
yeah, you guys,
you know,
you guys were definitely like one of the influencers for us, like,
yeah.
It's, you guys, amazing, were crushing K-Rock at that time, and you guys were, I remember we were like, shit, we need to get a tour with Pepper.
Yeah, yeah, 20 years later, man.
Oh, hey, it finally happened a
20
couple
years
ago.
Later, I love it. 20 years later, and speaking of full circle, here, yeah, we are. And
exactly.
On that note, man, I just want to thank you so much for coming up here and being the ninth disposable hero, man.
Well, I'm glad I'm the ninth choice, but
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Just, no, so, anytime, man.
Just so you know, I named the Pro Tools session before you told me it was the ninth episode, and it's labeled episode 10, eight.
Ep 8? Yeah, Mitch.
Keep it going. Just,
yeah,
keep it going.
Just keep,
I'm just
going
to keep putting them all. I'm going to fuck with them just to see if you catch it.
Yeah, get it. Yeah, that's all he's doing. He's keeping me on my toes. But anyway, well, hey, thanks everyone for joining us, and that was super fun. Thank you again, Maddie. Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, buddy.
And we'll see you guys soon, and keep it on the positive and keep smiling. All right.